Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, say can see.
If you're an American and you're professing to be a Christian,
well, of course, as American citizens, what we want is accountable leadership.
Why don't we throw in a constitution so they know what's in that?
Get engaged in the political process.
Honest.
You, my friend, are part of the problem
and not the solution.
Compassionate.
The church needs to rise.
The Monica Matthews
Show. Welcome back to the Monica Matthews Show. Happy Monday to you, January 23rd, 2023. 1-23-23. Welcome to another week of life. Today marks episode number 5. Of our Twitter Space series, that's right, about risk factor, COVID-19 risk factor, why COVID was made, with my special co-host and guest, Dr. Andrew Huff, who is the author of The Truth About Wuhan, How I Uncovered the Biggest Lie in History. You can purchase his book anywhere that books can be downloaded and or purchased. He is a former EcoHealth Alliance VP as well as senior scientist. Their EcoHealth Alliance is in the news today. You will want to follow that story. We're talking about people who have been paid regarding COVID-19 and what we're uncovering in this particular series of risk factor, why COVID was made, right? Did you catch that? Why and made. So for those of you who are still lost in the shuffle of information and mis and disinformation around COVID because people are attempting to bypass any form of justice, right, or judgment that is going to come down regarding all of the lies and payoffs and, you know, just the whole crime syndicate of what has occurred with regard to COVID-19, a lot of those things are being revealed in these spaces. But it's important for you to understand that why it was in fact made, right? And so we've covered that in episode 1. We covered pandemics and bioweapons, bioweapon preparedness, and how that relates to pandemics. And we had with us Colonel John Hoffman, as well as Mr. Charles Rixey, who is United States Marine Corps WEMD specialist, expert rather. And that was a very intriguing conversation and informative. And episode 2 was about biosurveillance and health intelligence, biointelligence and biosurveillance. That will open your eyes to a lot of the data mining that is occurring and the why, the who, the what, the how comes and all of that. And what will be the inevitable outcome of biosurveillance and health, quote, intelligence. Episode 3 was 20 years of Dirk and gain-of-function policy history. All of this is very important to understand the agencies that were involved with regard to gain-of-function and the, quote, why again. It also goes into other, you know, great detail about key actors that's very important to understand. And then today brings you to NIH, DoD SARS COVID-2. COV2 mRNA vax development from 2012 to 2019. Just stop right there. Let that sink in, right? Many of you did not realize that this goes way back. This is before you ever saw a fake or real video on TikTok of people dropping dead in streets in China, right? So this predates what we've ever known around COVID-19, per se. And so this is very important, again, to understand the genesis of a thing. Very important. So today we were joined by Dr. Huff, Texas Lindsay, as well as Charles Rixey. Again, we will return on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in my space at Monica On Air Talk. Even if you don't have a Twitter account, you can click the link and head into my space at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you would like to engage, however, you will need to be on a cell phone in order to execute that command. But without further ado, here we are.
Hey guys, welcome, 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 welcome. So Tin, can you open your mic, please, so I can make sure I can hear you? I could not hear the music in the space.
Yes.
All right, cool. Can clearly hear me. Excellent. Yeah, great. Welcome, everybody. I know there are some other interesting spaces going on right now, dealing with J6, with election integrity, all kinds of things. So I do thank you. You could be anywhere else but here, but I do appreciate your time and your attention to this. I don't think this is going to be the last time that we deal with COVID or anything of this nature moving forward. So I love all your feedback. Thank you. It's all been very positive, and you guys are learning things in this space that you have not heard elsewhere, which was our full intent. So thank you very much. And I know that Dr. Huff is in high demand. He has been making the rounds with regard to promoting his book. And I think many of you may have seen him on InfoWars, which is always, it's always, think what you want of Alex Jones, but it is one of those things, tough questions that other people don't, kind of makes you think. And I think I saw I saw you tweeting that, Andrew, is that right?
Oh my God. It was the most intense, scariest interview of my life. I wasn't so scared going into it. And then I sat down there and I'm looking at the spread of articles from the media or journal articles and all these things. So he's definitely done his homework on a lot of different subjects.
Sure.
And he really studies things before you come in there, and you have no clue what he's going to go into or what he's going to discuss. Because typically, I guess my experience so far with the media has been, you sort of have to prep them on what to discuss, and you have to provide them with content. Alex Jones, that doesn't happen. You just show up and you're sitting in the seat and you have no clue where it's going to go. And I can see why so many people have had meltdowns on his show and on his platform, because, you know, it's sort of funny. If you actually go to YouTube or, you know, Rumble or something, and you look, Alex Jones meltdowns. I mean, there's pages and pages of people melting down on his show over the year. And
that's,
I can
awesome.
see why, because if you're not ready for it, he just starts peppering things with you. And if you don't try to control the situation to some extent, you're going to, he's going to bury you. And that's when people start to freak out, and you have to remain calm. And it's also sort of interesting how he shoots it in the studio. So a lot of the cameras are automated and moving around, and he wants you to look at a certain camera across from you while he's sitting right next to you. And it's sort of unnatural from an interview when that's the way the studio is set up, because you want to look to the person that you're speaking with instead of staring at a camera in front of you. So it's all very interesting, and I'd love to do it again. Unfortunately, he had family things to attend to on Saturday, so we didn't get to do our 1 hour uninterrupted special, but you know, I was actually ready for it. It's a good warm up going on from the show with segments where you have a few breaks here and there to then just the 1 hour gauntlet.
Excellent. Yeah. He's so some of us come prepared with our own material, but many times you guys are sent out into the marketing ecosystem, and your publishers have sent questions specific, because you're on such a short, not only a limited amount of time, but you're also on a PR leash. And so it's like, you don't want to give the whole thing away so people actually buy your book. And so some publishers are a little bit more encapsulated than others, and they are more controlling than others. And so I am mindful of, they don't want you to deviate from any of the questions on that release sheet. And if I do, I get, you know, nabbed for that. Although I have ventured off the lead sheet, but generally speaking, a lot of them are that way. So I think your publishers, as I've said in my spaces before, are very cool. And they do a great job of, you know, staying on top of things and representing you well and your body of work. So what is the name of your publisher again?
Skyhorse, and that's via Simon & Schuster.
There you go. So Skyhorse, they're fantastic people to deal with. So for you authors, budding authors out there, keep that in mind. I love plugging people who are doing great work. And by all accounts, they seem to be doing great work. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get started. If you would, please do us a favor and retweet this space. Invite people in. You can also retweet it and text it. You can put it on Facebook. You can send it to Truth Social. You can put it on your YouTube account. You're not limited to only Twitter. People can tune in via desktop, laptop, and or phone. If they are going to contribute to the conversation, I don't know how much of that we will allow for today, just because, or a lot for, I should say, because we have a lot to cover and Dr. Huff was not able to be with us because of mitigating circumstances last week on Friday. So we're going to roll right through this because we're only here for an hour. You can also catch this in its entirety, and the entire show will be produced after this. And you can pick that up anywhere my podcasts are downloaded. So you can subscribe to my podcast and receive that. I'll also post it on this medium and several others. You guys can listen to that in its entirety if you happen to have to bail out of here. And it will be produced, and then you can scroll through that at your leisure, at your speed. I know for some of you that is very helpful to be able to kind of, you know, Monica times five or others. So, but this space, I will say, I'm going to toot our own horn here in that, and thanks completely to Dr. Huff and his guests who have joined us up to this point, who have been extremely transparent. They've been very forthcoming with information that you guys are not going to get in other spaces, or at least not for now. And primarily because I think it's important with something of this magnitude to contain the information in such a way that it's not, how do I say this? Information is my business, right? Like communications is my business. Information and intel for you. This is really intel. This isn't just information. This is intelligence for you to go back and make decisions for your own lives and your families and moving forward. And that's why we're doing this. And so we're not speculating. This isn't conjecture. We're not laughing. We're not poking fun and making jokes. And we're not interlacing this with political speak. This is science. This is technology. This is the military-industrial complex. This is a lot of things. And this is brought to you by people who have actually been there from the beginning. So that's why I appreciate, you know, you guys having respect for the space and sharing it, that you are getting out of it what we had hoped you would. So thank you again for your time. So where are we on? We're on day four of our Twitter spaces. And just to kind of recap, if you've missed anything, you can also go back and find those on my downloads. You can also find those here on my Twitter spaces, my Twitter feed rather. We have had nothing but technical issues over the past couple of times, but it sounds like we're no longer wonky or shaky, and I may actually get to hang out in my own space for the duration. So that'll be fun. But if it does get wonky, I put the space back on and we just keep rolling. So we don't miss a beat. So don't freak out. Just come back if that happens. But our first episode was the pandemic and bioweapon preparedness. It was an introduction to the history of bioweapons and pandemics. Also, I think episode two, we were on biosurveillance and health intelligence. That was very interesting. I would encourage all of you to go back and listen to that. And on Friday, we attempted to cover, although Mr. Rixey, who is, I believe, is he with? He is awesome. He has been our special guest since the beginning, and he's been very gracious with his time and his knowledge. And he is taking actually some great risk in sharing the information with us that he is. Not because anything in this space is classified, and there's my segue into my disclaimer. Anything that is shared in this space is not necessarily the view of Clear Talk Media and or me, your host, Monica Matthews, and or my co-hosts, aside from Dr. Huff, clearly, because this is his information. So, but my regular co-hosts and I are like, you know, we're here to learn like the rest of you. We are not experts in this field, but Mr. Rixey and Dr. Huff clearly are, as are other guests. So today, well, actually on Friday, we got into all kinds of things, not the least of which was gain of function. So you're going to want to go back and take a listen to that. And today we're talking about NIH, DOD, SARS, COVID V2, mRNA vax development from 2012 to 2019. So that's a mouthful. Right. And so we're going to start there. But first, I'm going to introduce my wonderful co-host. Dr. Andrew Huff is the author of The Truth About Wuhan, How I Uncovered the Biggest Lie in History. You can go to his Twitter feed, find out exactly how to purchase that and download that material. I highly encourage you to do so. He is the former EcoHealth Alliance VP. He is a VP as well as senior scientist. So he knows a thing or two. He also has an extensive background that goes way beyond EcoHealth Alliance, as you will hear today. And Andrew, maybe you can share some of that with us as you lead us into this conversation. Also, we have with us Mr. Charles Rixey, United States Marine Corps historian, DOS, weapons of mass destruction expert. So you've probably seen him in other spaces as well. And hold on one second. Let me invite Texas Lindsay up. With us as well. Okay. There we go. And Texas Lindsay is someone who is, I would consider her a communications expert, also a strategist, but she probably more importantly is a whistleblower liaison. And that's really important to have someone in your corner as you're attempting to bring your story out into the public. I think that her work is not as celebrated as it should be or understood. Anyone who's whistleblowing is offering themselves and their family members and their future, you know, up to the powers that be to a certain extent. And so unless you have the protection of our father, which I think everyone on this stage does, and Lindsay does an excellent job of representing these folks. So please follow Lindsay. You can also follow her Substack and you can find her literary work there as well. Lindsay, welcome. I'm glad you're able to make it. And without further ado, Dr. Huff, please lead us off with where we're going today.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And my apologies, everyone, for my not being able to attend last Friday. I had a series of live appearances and recorded appearances, and they didn't account for travel time between the appearances. So I was running late to every appearance that I went to, so I had to bail. So my apologies. So I guess a good way of, you know, getting into this is that in my book, I actually dedicate a chapter to mRNA technology because, as we previously discussed through the other spaces, this dance between gain-of-function research and dual-use research at concern and mRNA happen in concert because to have a protection against these infectious diseases that are being engineered, you have to have some technology or drug that you're developing. So you can't have one without the other. Now, they're not always vaccines, and I don't like to call the mRNA platform a vaccine because it's actually a gene therapy. So I think I'll start off by reading an excerpt out of my book, which was quite shocking when this was stated. And this was actually heavily suppressed on social media. But here we go. So another glaring example of the minority of scientists being proven correct occurred at the World Health Summit in 2021. In 2021, the president of Bayer's pharmaceutical division, Stephen Ulreich, stated, "Together with Bill and Melinda Gates, we're working very closely on family planning initiatives. We are really taking that leap to drive innovation. Us as a company, Bayer, in cell and gene therapies. Ultimately, the mRNA vaccines are an example for that cell and gene therapy. I always like to say, if we had surveyed 2 years ago in the public, would you be willing to take a gene or cell therapy and inject it into your body, we would probably have had a 95% refusal rate." So when you think of the context of everything that has happened and the big lie, the cover up of what happened with the lab leak, the push to get the mRNA jabs onto the market, this big fear component and stoking the fear was a key component of making that happen. Because I tend to agree with this executive, Stephen Ulrich. If they wouldn't have been pushing the fear, people wouldn't have been pushing this into their bodies. Now, with the mRNA technology, and we actually invited a couple other guests today, but typical problems that happen, you know, with, I guess, busy scientists and academics and government folks, they couldn't make it. So Colonel John Hoffman had scheduled and had agreed to be here with us today. And then unfortunately, he got called in as a subject matter expert to a Department of Homeland Security emergency meeting this afternoon, so he wasn't able to attend. I was exchanging text messages with Dr. Robert Malone, and he agreed to be here if he could make it work with his travel schedule. And then actually his flights got canceled over in Europe, so he's stuck in Europe right now trying to figure out a way to get home. So that's just the way it goes sometimes. So it's just going to be Charles and I riffing off each other at this point. So Charles, just out of quick curiosity, how much research have you done into the origin of the mRNA platform related to SARS-CoV-2?
Oh, yeah, Mike. Okay, there we go. So, a lot, not as much about the technology as dealing with the epitopes, or basically the actual spike itself that went into the vaccine. But because it's a DARPA original, because it came up through DARPA as a technology, and because obviously I worked with someone from DARPA to leak the diffuse documents. I have been able to get a lot of insight into what their thinking was, both from the earliest times, well, at least in around 2010, 2013, and then like how it has developed since then. So prior to that, I don't have that much knowledge, but since then, I've got a pretty good hold on it.
Sure. So I think then I can hop in. I have another excerpt from my book I can read real quick, and then we'll come back to you, Charles, and then we'll play Stump the Chump. So from 1987 to 2008, the mRNA vaccine technology and platform rapidly evolved simultaneously in three key areas and are grouped according to topic and not as they occurred to enhance clarity. So first, the mRNA platform itself was attested as a treatment in rats and as a cancer drug in mice. In 2005, it was discovered that the modified RNA evades immune detection, and that's important for how the story evolves. I'm sort of ad-libbing here. And with the first mRNA clinical trial for infectious diseases occurring in 2013. The second, which I think most of you are familiar with, is the lipid-based delivery system, which advanced with the first report of four-component lipid nanoparticle. That's a little bit of jargon there, which was used to deliver DNA into cells in 2001. In 2005, a scalable method for developing LNP was invented, and in 2018, the first drug with lipid nanoparticles was approved by the Food and Drug Administration. And the third course of development here is that the mRNA platform was combined with the NLP technology to make vaccines, quote unquote, with the first mRNA vaccine developed for influenza and tested in mice in 1993. The first mRNA vaccine with NLP was tested in mice in 2012, and the first clinical trial of mRNA vaccines with lipid nanoparticles was developed and tested for influenza in 2015. So this has been a platform that's been under development for a while, and I think the thing that's really interesting to point out here, in all these different clinical trials and the endpoints and outpoints of them, there was always problems or safety or health problems with the different mRNA technologies that they're testing, whether it's cancers, sudden death, all these different things. So it's really amazing to me how this gets pushed into.
Dr. Hoff, can I ask you something really quick before I forget?
Sure.
So you just said NLP. So
yes.
So I know NLP as neuro-linguistic programming.
NLP. So liquid nanoparticles.
Liquid. Oh, LNP.
LNP.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I was like, hold on. Like, did we already have the narrative around the mRNA stuff?
No.
That would make sense if we did. All of it would make sense. But okay, got it. All right. So
no,
LNP. Got
yes,
it.
Yes.
Okay.
And I didn't know
Thank
if
you.
I had to spell it out. I thought people would put it together. So maybe I should have explained that to people. So LNP is the acronym for lipid nanoparticle. So if you see it written out, when they say LNP in this space, in infectious disease, vaccine, vaccinology.
Thank you.
Yeah. LNP is lipid nanoparticle.
Okay. I heard NLP. All right, cool. Thank you so much for clarifying.
That's just my terrible Minnesota accent.
Well, there's that, but okay, go ahead. We forgive you.
So then there's another sideline here, another side story to how this is going on is Dr. Ralph Burke's involvement in this, but I think it's a good time to go back to Charles here. So Charles, do you briefly want to describe all the different government agencies where they would have been doing this type of work and research? Some of it may be related to DOD or the Department of Homeland Security and the specific facilities where they do this kind of research.
Oh, geez. So I'm not as familiar with outside of the DOD, but kind of alongside the development of mRNA and other technologies after September 11th, there was a switch towards becoming more integrated with private companies, sort of like public-private partnerships for biomedical technologies, especially related to dealing with emergencies like terrorist attacks or pandemics or something like that. So that's really how the NIH became involved with the defense side of things. And so you have, on one hand, in the public sector or in the private sector, you have all these companies that were investigating various technologies like Pfizer and Moderna. And Moderna was being supported by, at first, DARPA and then by the NIH as well. And then within the military, there's something called BARDA, which is kind of responsible for... Oh, man.
You're all over it. You're close.
I'm trying to, well, because there's several different entities and they come in at different times and they got mixed together during the pandemic. And I think that's part of the problem because BARDA was always on the defense side working on medical countermeasures, which is what the military calls, therapeutics or vaccine prophylaxis for or against a pathogen of some kind. And then on the civilian side, serving between these was the Department of Health and Human Services, a guy named Robert Cadillac. He was an assistant secretary for preparedness and response. And his job was to kind of coordinate between public and private entities and allocate funds where they need to go. And he built this role up over almost two decades. And then fulfilled it during the first 2 years of the pandemic.
Yeah, you nailed it.
So I'd say that's probably the big part.
Well, you nailed it. And so the other acronym here is ASPR, so the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response. And it's sort of funny in this world of pandemics and bioterrorism and biowarfare, there's several different U.S. government agencies operating either under Health and Human Services, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, that are all sort of working in parallel or might even be redundant in some cases for building these types of technologies. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up Robert Cadillac because I discussed a fair amount of what he had done to make this all happen in my book. And Robert Kennedy Jr. does the same in his book. I mean, I really believe that he was a critical component, I guess, of making this happen from the human social dynamic side of actually putting the programs and process into place. I believe he was also an Air Force surgeon, as I recall. And you know, it's interesting that with the Department of Defense, because you know what happens is that the Department of Defense stops having a lot of these bio programs, whether it be bio research for, you know, if you want to call it weapons, or which, you know, they're not supposed to be engaged in, but medical countermeasures, dual use research concern, gain of function. This big shift happens where they start to do this all out in the open, and it's moved off DOD into NIH through Dr. Anthony Fauci at NIAID, because most of all the chemical weapons response and biologics research now happens through NIAID, the sub agency at NIH, which I find to be one of the strangest things ever to happen in government structure. I mean, to think about how weird this is to everyone in the audience listening. So here you have an issue which would fall firmly under, I could say, you know, three different agencies potentially. You could argue the FBI, you could argue the Department of Homeland Security, or you could argue the Department of Defense. But here, all this chemical and biological and CBRN research has been moved firmly within Health and Human Services, which is both, you know, is typically a public health and medical entity, and specifically within NIH, which is a research institution. And then it's even stranger than NIAID, the National Institute for Allergens and Infectious Diseases, which is my section of NIH, where, you know, I've been a grant reviewer and I spent most of my time, that this research is sitting there of all places. It's strange. It actually makes more sense for the biological parts, which is might be infectious diseases. But all this research has happened out in the open. And back to Charles's point about the creation of private public partnerships, that pressure really comes on during the Obama administration, from my perspective, because they get really criticized by Congress for trying to do all this work in-house, the government does. So here you have Congress griping at the executive branch saying, well, why don't you have more private partnerships? And there's some good logic on Congress's side by that, because most critical infrastructure, like 80% of it, is owned by the private sector. So if you want, you know, programs to be successful, you want to outsource them. And that's also maybe sometimes how conservatives, you know, think companies are more efficient and effective doing these things. So that's why you see this work getting outsourced.
And Andrew, wasn't there a lab leak also that led to this under the Obama administration that really was a pivotal moment for that?
Which one are you referring to?
there was one that was significant enough for the moratorium to take effect. I mean, the ball started rolling after one of the lab leaks happened, and I believe it happened in 2014, which led to the moratorium to go into effect in 2017.
Well, there were a series of bad things that sort of happened between 2012 and 2014. Anthrax samples, I think it was from an FDA laboratory, get shipped across the country in an improper manner. Then they're found and discovered in a place where they're not supposed to be. There's a number of lab leaks at U.S. facilities engaged in dangerous research, I think. I don't know if you Samard was one, but actually Dr. Ralph Barrick's laboratory has a number of leaks over time. And
that's right.
These leaks just keep sort of popping up. And then there's always the issue of, well, you know, what's in epidemiology, we talk about this thing called confirmed cases and suspected cases when trying to make histograms and analyze data of individual case level data. Well, you can use that same logic when analyzing laboratory leaks. Well, this is a suspected case or suspected laboratory leak or a confirmed one, because sometimes, depending on the infectious disease or agent you're working with, it's really hard to determine causality. And this is actually what they've made the whole COVID origin debate about falsely, because this one is actually very easy to prove. But if you're working with highly pathogenic avian flu strain, that's a little bit more difficult to prove. And even at one extreme, there's actually been laboratory leaks of plant pathogens, they believe, from the Galveston laboratory, which happens in the same period of time, which wreaks havoc on the citrus crops in the South. So there's actually a number of different types of leaks that all sort of happen at the same time. And I think the administration just takes the heavy-handed approach to say, we're going to ban all this stuff, because obviously the administration, the executive branch, doesn't have control of it. I mean, at least that's the way I perceive it.
Hey, Dr. Huff, what did they feel was the cause of all these leaks that were happening all in this short time frame lead up?
Well, and I discussed it. Okay, that's a great question. So I discussed this in my book at length. And so I used to build a lot of risk assessment platforms and tools for the government. So I spent a lot of time sitting around thinking about how things can go wrong. And in the military, you do this too. You know, you're looking at the battlefield, you're planning an operation or mission, you're practicing executing it, and you look at how things can go wrong, because that's what you want to try to, you know, if you find weaknesses, vulnerabilities in your own process, you want to try to minimize the risk around that, whatever it might be. In the national security circles, when I worked at India National Laboratories, we always called it the human in the loop, and especially like looking at nuclear safety. It's the technologies and things that we build, we can test, you know, we can test a piece of hardware, we can test a containment device, you know, millions of different times, and you can even do it and simulate it, and you can understand mathematically with in terms of probability, what the risk is, very specifically. But the problem is when you're dealing with people, you can't, people are unpredictable and you don't know how they're going to screw things up or what bad decisions they're going to make. And, you know, you're dealing with people. And when you're dealing with lab infectious disease or agents or, you know, chimerics or whatever in this laboratory setting, it just only takes one person to decide to eat their sandwich in a place where they're not supposed to potentially expose themselves to agents. And I use that example because eating and drinking in laboratories is a huge problem. And it's a mistake that people make all the time because they feel overconfident, or, you know, you forget to turn the negative pressure on or the vacuum on a hood that you're working on underneath, or maybe the pressure gets reversed if you're working with the right kind of model. So there's just a million different ways that can go wrong. And it's typically, you know, relies on a person not following a checklist, or, you know, sometimes taking a corner or so, maybe a piece of equipment breaks and they're up against a deadline and they want to get the work done. So they just decide to assume the risk and continue with the work. As the case, which we suspect with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, they're working in lower biosafety level conditions, which are not appropriate for the agent that they're working with based on the risk profile of the agents that they're working with. But once again, that was a human decision that did that. That's not like a piece of equipment failing or whatever. It's just someone just deciding to do something stupid. And most of the time when you go look at these laboratory accidents or failures, it's always a human failing. And this is why I've been against another one of the reasons why I've been against gain of function work. And another reason why I'm against the location of the National Bioagriculture Facility in Kansas, because even if they do everything right at that laboratory and they happen to be working with something that's really dangerous, that's a BSL level 3 or 4 agent, which means it's highly pathogenic and, you know, the consequence if it escapes the laboratory can be grave. You know, here they put this laboratory in the middle of that studies foreign animal diseases in the middle of the heartland, right? And where we have a lot of cattle and swine production and turkeys and chickens and other things and crops, you know, the most valuable cropland in the world. And, you know, if something escapes those that laboratory and gets into the animal population, it could be economic catastrophe for the United States, because most of our GDP is food production. So there's differences of opinion here, and that's certainly great, but it's always the human in the loop that causes the problem.
Tim, I know you're usually loaded with questions, so please.
Yes, definitely. I just, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, and it kind of it brings me back to when I was looking into the research papers and studies related to advanced viral vectors and means to deliver mRNA for the purposes of countering inflammatory conditions. And I was just wondering if you wanted to discuss a little bit about the viral vector research that came, you know, on, you know, either slightly before or around the time that mRNA platform was being developed.
Well, I haven't actually heard the keyword term bio vector. Is that what you said? I want to make sure I get this right.
No, viral vectors.
Viral, like, gotcha. Yeah. I thought you said something else. Okay. Viral vectors. I mean, I think that's another good example of jargon used in industry to describe the threat you're trying to mitigate. So, and oftentimes you might use viral vector in context with a class or family of viruses that you're concerned of. And one viral vector would be coronaviruses. Well, in terms of how that relates to mRNA vaccine technology, I mean, I think flu viruses, coronaviruses, Hendra viruses, those would be the ones that were typically, you know, targeted, because that's where the most, I guess, fear lied, and where you could probably make the most money if you get the population to accept them, especially in terms of, you know, you want the largest market possible. And the huge success there while they were making money off it was obviously the flu vaccine, because think about how many people typically received a traditional flu vaccine. Does that answer your question?
It gets kind of close, but it just one of the areas I was looking at was more the delivery of mRNA for the purposes of doing other things, as even as far as reverse aging or looking into solving genetic or immune condition, you know, that this was like kind of the foundational concepts, but they obviously went very far away from that in where it went into this sort of militarized gain of function research.
Okay. Well, now I think I understand your question better. So I think so that when you're dealing with mRNA, and remember, it's a messaging, mRNA is a messaging building block within a cell, is a way to look at it. And so if you're able to get it to teach in a cell to code a different protein, and in being creative here, the sky is the limit of things you could do with it. I mean, you could use it for anti-aging. You could use it for cancer research. These are things they actually tried. You could use it to try building a better immune response for infectious diseases. And when you look at new drug discovery, they want to, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and a company like Moderna are looking for any aspect or angle where they can make money on this. So you look at the elements that are big markets in terms of where do consumers spend their money. And so the first thing you mentioned was anti-inflammatories. I think when you first asked the question, that sort of threw me off. But the irony here is if you look at what the mRNA jabs have as an adverse event or a side effect, is they cause terrible inflammation. So people are getting inflammation of the heart, you know, in the vascular system, it appears, in the respiratory system. So if that's one of the side effects here, it's like, well, there's a lot of unintended consequences from the use of mRNA. That's why I'm against its use now. It's hard to predict what the most recent research I read, that the endoplasmic reticulum is actually pumping out nonsense into the cell, and what that nonsense causes all sorts of problems in terms of, you know, with the proteins that it's coding. Whether that, you know, I think that there's a good chance that will turn out to be true, but it can go a lot of different ways, and we just don't know yet.
Andrew, was that also true for the cancer therapies, the experiments with mRNA, that you were also having the same immune response, hyperimmune response?
Not always. I mean, I read a bunch of different studies.
Charles just said yes.
Well, Charles,
not exactly. He's right. It's not exactly, but they did see.
Charles,
it.
Go ahead and hop in.
Okay. Well, so I definitely want to say that the way that they marketed this was horrific, because even now you'll see it's very common for them to say, okay, the vaccine does not contain the virus itself. It, you know, contains a piece of it, but not the entire one. Therefore, the vaccine cannot make you sick with COVID-19. And that's true. But unfortunately, it can still make you sick with all of the same problems, and sometimes even worse. And when we pretend that there's not consequences, then you're basically giving people a false sense of security. And in this case, with COVID-19, not only is the spike protein antigenic and damaging without the rest of the viral genome, but the same things that it causes, the same inflammation and damage and stuff, is exacerbated by two things. One, the lipid nanoparticle and the mRNA itself, and the way that it bypasses various systems in your body. And two, the quantity of spike protein that is in the initial jab and then that is produced over an unknown period of time after it starts transfecting. Basically they've said, okay, well, this is, you're not going to get COVID. Well, but if you get things that happen in COVID, and you can even get them worse, because you have 10 or 100 times as many spike proteins in your body, then that's a false premise. That's very, sure, very dangerous.
I have I know of someone currently who is close to 18, right around 2 years of age, was vaccinated. And just a few months ago, and is currently in the hospital and has been in the hospital for the past week or so with a myriad of infections, everything from E. coli to you name it, and has been borderline septic. Excuse me. And what they discovered was that her white blood cell count was so low that she could not fight really anything. So, you know, no one is really wanting to draw a line or a straight arrow to the fact that she had just been vaccinated just under 2 years of age. So I was just curious, you know, I mean, it obviously you've got a cocktail of things going on inside the human body with this. And, you know, as we've all been told, but it helps to have the science breakdown before. So before we move on, welcome to the space, you guys. We're on part four. We're on episode four. If you've missed the other three, please go back and listen to those. You can find them on my Twitter feed as well as in my podcast. If you're not subscribed to my podcast, please do so. I also see Maze Levin here, who hosts Great Spaces on this as well. So please follow her. I have my regular co-host with me here today, who is Tinfoil Tricorn. Thank you for being here. And Christopher, who has his hand up, we're going to go to him next. He is also my regular co-host, but we are joined by the beautiful Texas Lindsay. Please follow her as well. She too hosts amazing spaces around this topic and along many others, as well as many others. Dr. Huff is our special guest today, as well as Mr. Charles Rixey. So please follow Charles. He is literally an encyclopedia of information that will just have you saying, holy crap, every time you read one of his tweets. And, you know, I feel like the dumbest person in the room when I'm reading his tweets, because I'm like, God, now I have to go get a medical dictionary to understand any of this. But the whole reason we're doing this is to bring a different level of awareness to what's really transpired. And without, you know, without it becoming politicized, without it, you know, just, I just want an orthodox approach on behalf of the people who know exactly what the hell's going on and who have been there from the beginning, not conjecture, not pontification, not upset people, not politics. I don't care about Trump and Biden and all the injection stuff. I want to go back to the beginning. And this was Dr. Huff's idea to bring this information forward. So you guys have really an inside view as to what's been going on, the what, the why, the who, the when, the how comes, and all that stuff. So welcome. If you're just now joining us, please retweet the space if you haven't done so already. And make sure that you're sharing the space as well once it concludes, which will be in about 25 minutes. Christopher, go ahead.
So you started the space, Dr. Huff and Texas Lindsay. You guys started the space in reference to the start, going back to the beginning of COVID, the COVID shot, you know what I mean, and the creation of this mRNA technology into there. And you referenced it in terms of family planning with the Bill and Gates, Bill Gates and Melinda Gates Foundation. And we see them in the emails that have been leaked all the way up until, you know, even in the February emails, January emails, where they clearly at this point know it's a lab leak. So can you kind of talk to the room or just tell the room what was their mindset in this for family planning? Was it just gene therapy like these custom babies, or was it actually more, you know, a darker view in terms of limiting reproduction of children?
That's a great question. So first of all, when I opened this up, that was not me speaking. That was actually a quote from Stephen Ulrich. He was a Bayer pharmaceutical executive. And he actually said those words publicly at a conference in 2021. And I was shocked when he said all this. There's actually a YouTube clip of this or a Rumble clip where you can go look this up. So that was not me saying it. That was a pharmaceutical executive. And I think it's like on page, you know, take a look here in my book because I actually have it up. It is page, I think it's one. Well, I take that back. It's on page, actually on page two, because I use it as a page two of the book, because I use it as a introductory to shock people of, you know, what's really going on. And whether or not they're, you know, what type of family planning or trying to discuss how they're, I mean, trying to imagine how they're going to use this, I have no clue. And I had worked around the periphery of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I had actually been a consultant as an epidemiologist and a scientist and a technologist on a number of I shouldn't say a number. I should say a few Bill Gates' foundations funded projects. So I have some familiarity working with them, but there's nothing ever nefarious, at least to this degree. I mean, it sounds insane to me, but I really have no clue.
Andrew, for the sake of the conversation, is it short enough for you to read it?
Read it again?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you.
I'm just going to pull it up.
While he's pulling that up, I can just add that there was a Harvard study that I think I've mentioned this before, that went and did a history of all the WeChat searches in China, which is kind of like Google in China, and of all the symptoms that were very flu-like that people were looking up in China around the August timeframe. And this was, I think, around August and possibly July. And they did an overview of the hospital, a bird's eye view, showing that the hospitals were very empty the year before at the same time, but the hospital parking lots were full. And so all this chatter was going on. And Bill Gates is very connected to the World Health Organization and is very in tune with what's going on at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And at the same time, he's investing into BioNTech. He invested his first $50 million into BioNTech in September. And it's public information press release, but that all the noise that was going on in China was already known amongst the epidemiologist community and Andrew as well. He was starting to get whispers about what was going on early on in China. So there's a whole community that was very much aware of what was likely happening. And that makes Bill Gates' BioNTech investment very suspicious that he invested into this in September 2019. So I just wanted to throw that in there with the Bill Gates thing before Andrew reread that.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah, so I have a quote up. And thank you for that, Lindsay. So this is from Stephen Ulrich, Bayer's pharmaceuticals division executive. Together with Bill and Melinda Gates, we're working very closely on family planning initiatives. We are really taking that leap to drive innovation, us as a company, Bayer, in cell and gene therapies. Ultimately, the mRNA vaccines are an example for that cell and gene therapy. I always like to say, if we had surveyed 2 years ago in the public, would you be willing to take a gene or cell therapy and inject into your body? We would have had a 95% refusal rate. So that's them stoking the fear to get this technology, you know, out into the market. So Charles, this is, you know, a fun question to ask. So do you want to go over the different sequences within both the agent and the vaccine, well, gene therapy within the jab?
I mean, there's a lot. There's literally dozens of concerning parts of the genome just in the spike. In fact, I've made a graphic that I can add after this is done that just shows in the 1273 amino acid sequence of the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2, there's more than one inferior cleavage site. There is several prion-like domains. There's all sorts of stuff. But for our purposes, the two biggest concerns are the hearing cleavage site and what are just generally called HIV inserts. And what those are three specific... Well, there's four inserts, really, inside the SARS-CoV-2 spike. And what that means is when you compare the original SARS virus spike protein to SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, SARS-CoV-2 is slightly longer by approximately 40 amino acids. And that difference is made up almost entirely of four inserts, so four additional spaces. And so you can think of this as that it's a little bit longer, so when you try to align them, it doesn't line up perfectly because it's a little bit longer one than the other. And this isn't uncommon, and insertions do happen especially with recombination, which is a primary reason why coronaviruses can evolve so quickly. But in this case, all four of these, one of them being the furin cleavage site, all four of them have high homology, which means they're very, very close in what their amino acids are and nucleotides to specific pieces within the HIV, for lack of a better term, spike protein, which is called GP120, well, and also the GAG protein. So basically, this spike protein has key pieces of HIV's spike protein on it, in addition to everything that the original SARS virus had. And in particular, these three of those have, it's now been shown that these three are an integral reason why SARS-CoV-2 can infect immune cells directly, specifically dendritic cells.
I want you to keep going, but I just want to add an interesting point here. So the reason why I wanted you to go through that is someone had raised a question earlier about, you know, the sort of the disease or outcomes associated either with the jabs or the agent. The weird thing that they're noticing. Well, this is extremely rare. I don't want to be a fearmonger here, but from speaking with several military physicians, one being Colonel Teresa Long, and then looking at the other case reports popping up in the United States, you know, there was a meme floating around, you know, they were talking about SARS-CoV-2 and the jabs. It just turns out that it was AIDS. Well, the reality here is it's very rare. So this is not to fearmonger. This is very rare for people who have been jabbed, but some have developed full-blown HIV symptoms. So, I mean, when I say some, like, once again, this is very rare, but there's been no indication, especially with the military population, people who developed HIV, that they had any exposure through either sexual contact or any other behavior or like a blood transfusion or anything where they could have acquired HIV. So it's really strange. This is extremely rare, okay, but it has been noticed and documented. And when looking at the genetics of these, the agent and the jab, and I know where Charles is going with this, I don't want to steal his fire. You know, it's very interesting that's happened in a few people. So sorry to interrupt you, Charles, but I just wanted to point that out.
Well, no, that's fine. And what people need to understand is that AIDS is not the same thing as HIV. And so HIV is a virus that causes an acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. But you can have immune dysregulation without it coming from AIDS. I mean, rheumatoid arthritis, my mom has that. And that's just another example of something different. So there's all these different causes of things that can cause immune suppression. But what we can say is that that there is a lot of immune suppression that's taking place. And this is something that's just very recently been coming out, which is that the mRNA jabs in particular are causing your immune system to produce antibodies that, as if it's similar to an allergic response. And so it's basically what's happening is that your body is starting to deaden itself to the spike protein because it's saying, okay, well, I've seen too much of it. So instead of becoming inflamed, I'm going to put these antibodies out, which don't cause an immune response. But the problem is that you want that if you're talking about an allergen, but you don't want that if you're talking about a virus. And so that is like, just in the last month, that's been something that several studies have come out that are corroborating this. And it's specifically coming not from the virus, but from mRNA vaccines specifically. So once again, because of this novel method of creating these spike proteins, you're messing with the immune system's homeostasis. And there's a lot of people trying to figure that out right now because that it's unprecedented and they don't, but it's not good. And it's something that we would have been able to see because we should have known. In fact, I know that they should have known this because they've had vaccine trials for HIV in the past. And in several HIV vaccine trials in the last 5 years, there have been, well, really in the last 15, they've seen this antibody, what's called cross-switching of isotypes. And so they could have anticipated this, but they said nothing. And even now they're saying nothing. So, but I literally went back last week and found several different studies, some done by the NIAID, that show that they understood this process. And so my biggest concern is that they're not telling this to the public, that they're not explaining that they should have seen this coming.
Well, for obvious reasons. I mean, it's all part of the bigger cover-up, and that's specifically related to the jab. So
right.
This one of the, I think, the most shocking or stunning moments of last year for me, being the nerd that I am, was the series that you did with Jay related to, you know, why those HIV inserts might have been put in. Do you want to discuss that real briefly? I mean, why would they add HIV inserts to a coronavirus? I mean, it sounds crazy.
Sure. Well, so... The bottom line is that whatever the reason is, it can't be good, because the HIV inserts have caused a lot of controversy. In fact, I've been able to basically prove that the main reason that Dr. Fauci started censoring science and us in general, and the main reason that he had he called his meeting with Jeremy Farrar on February 1st, 2020, was in response to a paper that was published on January 31st, so the previous day, by a group of Indian scientists who kind of sounded the alarm. Hey, there's these four pieces of the genome which bear striking resemblance to different parts of the HIV spike protein. And so I have no doubt that that was the main reason that caused it, because Dr. Fauci already knew about the furin cleavage site, and he didn't say anything. He'd already known for 3 weeks because it was part of his vaccine. But the addition of these HIV components, that scared them, because it would be impossible for that to have happened in nature. Now, I could go into the science, but we don't really have all the time. But it was impossible for these three pieces to go from three exposed places on one virus to a completely separate virus, but in the exact perfect spots on that new virus to be most effective. And basically, what they do is they allow this virus to infect dendritic cells. And this is the biggest part about all of this, is that it's part of the diffuse proposal. This is one of the things that they stated in writing that they intended to do, EcoHealth Alliance with the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the University of North Carolina in a SARS-like coronavirus, was insert furin cleavage sites and insert and work to create a virus that could utilize the DC-SINE pathway. They had the intent to do it.
Well, you just tied that, you wrapped that all up perfectly. When you went to diffuse, I was going to ask you about that next. Okay, so let me ask you another question here. So what do you think the tie, though, is between, you know, modifying the infectious agent to have these three or four specific inserts, which were also patented by Moderna, I might add? Why add those, you know, why add those to an agent you're engineering? And what's the relationship between that and the mRNA jabs?
Well, so... ostensibly, the reason that they wanted to do it was because they wanted to, what they claimed they were trying to do is create a bat vaccine thing that would suppress, it would cause any viruses that looked kind of like this inside bats to evolve away from them. And so their plan was to infect bats with these little nanoparticle spike proteins. It's not exactly the same as what the mRNA technology is, but close enough that that DARPA understood what it was. And this was actually the main reason why they rejected the diffuse proposal. And this is incredibly important for what follows, because what they said is that they rejected because this spike nanoparticle was only partial epitope coverage, which means instead of using the whole virus for a vaccine, you're going to use a spike, which is already, like, viruses already evolve, but this is going to cause them to evolve faster in ways that you can't predict. And so the real tragedy, in fact, the first article that I wrote after we released the diffuse documents was about this, because I said, because it was actually just after the mandate had taken effect in federal and in, especially in the military. And I said, why, after the Defense Department rejected this idea in bats in 2018, 3 years later, the president ordered them to universally vaccinate everybody with basically the same thing. And that is to me, that's a travesty. But the bottom line is they had already rejected it. They were forced to vaccinate everybody, all the soldiers, with something that they had rejected, that they said was not ready. To me, that's one of the biggest tragedies of this entire pandemic.
I agree. And the thing that I'll add here, which I discuss in the book, is how at EcoHealth Alliance, we used to work ahead of the receipt of funding. So it didn't matter whether or not DARPA gave us money to do any work. We were already doing it before the time we received money. We would find a buyer for our research. So in context of the diffuse proposal, it didn't matter that Diffuse had rejected it and not given EcoHealth Alliance money. They were probably already working on it because while I worked there, that's what we always did.
Wow. Tragic and, dare I say, criminal. You know, before I go to Heather, and I brought Heather up because I trust Heather to ask an actual germane question. and Heather's great. If you're not following Heather Mullins, please do so. Great investigative journalist. We love Heather here. So, but you know what, you guys, this explains so much. If you were paying attention to the pressers, this is for us lay people who speak, like, you know, basic English. I feel like I'm having to become, you know, a toxicologist, an epidemiologist, a neuroscientist, a spook. Like, there's so many new aspects to my life that I didn't have 3 years ago. So this is really profound and amazing. But I remember watching the first pressers with Birx and Fauci, and they always mentioned HIV every single press conference. And that stood out to me. And I thought, why do they keep making this correlation between what's happening now and the emergence of COVID and SARS-2 and HIV? So I started to ask myself the question, and Andrew, you just confirmed it, that albeit there may be very few cases, and again, we're not fear-mongering, and don't run out with a headline that says, Monica Space, Dr. Huff said that people who have been injected now have AIDS, you know, HIV or AIDS. That's not what we're saying. There have been a few cases of this. I'm not surprised. So to hear you say that, and I don't know how all the proteins cross-pollinate and move and all of that, but it just made sense to me that these guys are playing Frankenstein with something that Fauci has had his fingers in for a very long time, not to mention the Gates Foundation. So it's just all becoming a little bit clearer now. And honestly, I am concerned. I just told you what happened to a toddler, effectively, whose immune system has done exactly what Charles told us is occurring in people who have been vaccinated, injected. We keep using the term vaccinated, injected. And this child's immune system has all but shut down just a few months after being injected. And so very concerning and criminal, not to mention what you just said about our armed forces. Andrew, I mean, I held a space just a few weeks ago with men and women who have adverse effects. You know, they're grounded. I mean, it is a nightmare
what has occurred with our military readiness. But with that, we will be closing the space soon because Andrew has other, he has time constraints as well as other obligations, as I'm sure Charles does as well. So I want to go to Heather. And then if you guys would like to, Tim and Christopher, if you have any other questions, please ask those now. And then Dr. Huff and Charles, if you guys don't mind just kind of tying a nice little bow around today. And please make sure that you guys share this space once it's over, as well as there will be a produced show that will go along with this. You guys can fast forward, rewind, whatever it is you want to do, and share it with as many people as you can, please. That is the whole point in this series, is to get the word out. But Heather, please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Monica. It's crazy that that I just happened to stumble across this space, because all day today and yesterday, I've been watching this 4-hour presentation by Dr. Richard Fleming. He has a website called theflemingmethod.com, and he actually goes into details. He's a professor, and he goes into the details of exactly what was just being talked about, this sequencing, right, where they take basically like the genetic makeup of HIV-1 and they take bits and pieces of it and they attach it to a coronavirus, essentially. And he cites in this 4-hour presentation the exact studies where they were doing this. It was Dr. Shi, was it Jing Li, from the Wuhan lab. And he lays it out in this 4-hour presentation, which I dropped a link for in the comments of this space, so you guys can go look at it. But basically, he teaches it in a way that a professor would at a college, right? So as you're watching this presentation, he has slides, he has images of the coronaviruses. He teaches you what a spike protein is. Like everybody knows, one question he asked everyone in the room, he's like, how many people have heard the word spike protein? Well, how many of you know how to explain what it is? Well, this is what you're not being told, right? Everyone has all these bits and pieces, but what he really does in this 4-hour presentation is he sews it all together like you would get if you were a new college student sitting in his classroom. He gives you the building blocks and he tells you exactly what you need to know so that at the end of it, you can piece it all together and see it for yourself. So I dropped that in the comments, but exactly what was just being talked about, how the bits and pieces of the HIV virus were merged with coronaviruses to create this bioweapon, is kind of like what he lays the foundation for. And what he specifically said was that this spike protein had 590 amino acids, which was 1,770 nucleotides that match HIV-1 virus, right? And the way he explained it is that in order for that to be a mutation, things mutate one nucleotide at a time. So to go from a coronavirus to having all these parallels, it would be a long, gradual process that would take a really long time in order for that to happen naturally, right? So that the only way this could physically happen is if you were to man-make it in a lab and take the sequences and insert them into something else, if that makes sense. But yep. It's all laid out in that link that I dropped in the comment section. So it's crazy stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Heather.
And I've worked with Dr. Fleming on a couple of different projects or things we've tried to get going. He has a wealth of knowledge, and I support all the work he's been doing. I haven't had a chance to watch the videos myself. He recently just put a series of experiments related to, I believe, the mRNA jabs up, and I'm excited to watch it because I think that might be a new take on science. And I'm going to let Charles wrap things up because I actually have to step out right now to walk into a studio. So thank you, everyone, for coming, but I'll let Charles wrap this up, and I'll see you guys on Wednesday.
Excellent. Thank you. Have a good day. Thanks. I appreciate it, Andrew.
Hi.
Okay. I'd like to go to Charles. Give me one second. I'd like to go over to David Beckerman. I brought him up as well. Air Force pilot fighting unlawful mandates. He was in my active military and military readiness space just a few weeks ago. David, welcome back. Did you have a question?
Yeah. And actually, hey, thanks for bringing me up. I actually have just want to put something on your radar instead of a question this time, but I'll be quick. January 26th, the FDA is meeting. They're having their vaccine committee. They're going to be discussing future vaccination regimen. And I dropped the link in there in the comments. You have until the 25th to go leave the FDA comments. But what we're expecting is that they're going to make these bivalent boosters, the unlicensed EUA bivalent boosters, they're going to arbitrarily make them the new primary two-dose series. The primary monovalents don't exist. You can't find them in pharmacies. The DOD and the government, they spent a combined of almost $5 billion on 170 million doses last summer for the fall vaccinations. And I don't know if you guys are following the booster acceptance rates has been in the gutter. So what we're expecting, and there, if you follow the FDA officials' accounts, they've been beating the bivalent drum for a minute. They're drumming up support to just say, "Yep, it's good. We, you know, it reduces the risk of hospital." Isn't based on science. This is just based on, you know, what am I trying to say here? And this is an administrative decision, not a science decision.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. You guys, please follow David Beckerman. Follow him. He has he'll keep you on point with what's happening and the actual truth of what's happening within the military, which if you missed that space, you can also go back and catch that. And I believe we have that archived as one of my podcasts as well. That was extremely informative. And we've been able to help a young lady in there pretty bigly, actually, who is vaccine injured. And she's 22 years of age, 23 now. A young woman, you know, signed up to serve the country and is now, she has a host of health maladies that she's contending with. So kudos to all of you, my space participants. You guys rock and came up out of your pockets. And we have, we have amplified what little bit she started with. These guys, David and her brothers in uniform, have rallied around her to make sure that, you know, she's supported. She has a voice. She was on with Emerald Robinson last week as well. And we're giving a voice to men and women in uniform who are taking great risk of coming into spaces, not speaking on behalf of the DOD. There's our disclaimer, not speaking on behalf of the United States government, but speaking on behalf of themselves as individuals, you know, with bodily autonomy and First Amendment rights, in theory, at least. However, there's a much deeper implication to this, as we've all heard, with regard to whether or not this is a legitimate injection, a vaccine, do people have the legitimate authority to mandate that you inject yourself with something that has not been tested and tried and true? So David is leading the charge on that, along with some other ladies and gentlemen who were in that space. And if you guys are hosting your own spaces, reach out to David. He's a wealth of information, and he can bring a group of people with him who would be happy to inform your respective audiences. I encourage you to do that as well. And so, Christopher, I see you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Well, I think this kind of got answered already, maybe, but Charles, I was going to ask you and Dr. Huff, but I can just ask you now. So what I'm gathering from what you stated is, aside from the Furin cleavage site, which was the clear example that this, was man-made, what you're stating or, you know, suggesting here is that with all of these signature traits of HIV, the differences in the length that you referenced, there's no way when Mr. The Science, Dr. Fauci, stated to the public that he was unaware, that he did not believe this was a lab leak. It was very clear at this point that all of these scientists knew this was man-made, correct?
Yes, and so I'll go ahead. And this is a great way to close it, because, so first of all, I know Dr. Fleming. I spoke at his Crimes Against Humanity tour several times. So did Dr. Huff. When it comes to the military mandate, that was one of the main things I was fighting after we released Diffuse, because that was actually the reason why it was part of an Inspector General whistleblower complaint, is because they're questioning the legitimacy of it through that means. And yes, the bottom line is, so Diffuse, they had the intent to do this, and then they hid that document. In fact, when the Biden report on the origin of COVID came out, that was a lie. The intelligence community was lying to the American people, because I knew about Diffuse, and we were preparing to release those documents as they were lying to the American people, pretending that they didn't know anything about it. And it culminates that in 2020, Dr. Fauci, first of all, he had to know about the Furin cleavage site, because his lieutenant, Barney Graham, the main decision they made before they finished the sequence on their prototype vaccine was whether or not to retain the furin cleavage site. And the key here is that they had never done that before. I went back over 20 years. I looked at dozens of studies of vaccine prototypes that they made across different types of viruses. They would always remove the furin cleavage site. Also, the same pieces that are of HIV that these represent were almost always removed from HIV vaccines. So in every case, even if it was conceivable that Dr. Fauci, like if he saw the genome but didn't realize it, his vaccine research center, which co-produced, which created the sequence and worked with Moderna to make the Moderna vaccine, they knew exactly what it was. And I have an HIV vaccine genome sequence from October 2019 from another paper where they took out all these same pieces yet again. So to answer your question, yes, they knew what these represented. And he knew already that they were in there and said nothing. And the reason why he got so scared and called all these scientists to get together to cover it up is because there was no way that they would be able to, like, they had to immediately call it conspiracy. They had to immediately attack it, because if people understood that that connection existed, then it would become obvious to everyone that it could not be natural. And that has underlied all of this.
And that's what I wanted to point out and just end on my end, is that he did more than not say nothing.
Correct.
He was very vocal in these emails that are now coming out. And he did even worse, which is that he lied. He lied under oath in terms of his knowledge. He lied to the American public day after day after day after day on cable TV and local TV. So he did a lot more than know nothing. He knowingly misled the American people and our elected politicians, which led to horrendous decision making that impacted so many families. So,
yes, he did. Yes, he did. And I know that myself, Andrew Huff, Major Murphy, and many others, we look forward to being able to testify to those effects, because it's time for justice.
Excellent. Thank you. And along with that, episode 5 is coming up this Wednesday at the same time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will discuss the COVID emergence timeline, events, and the COVID cover up. So we have a very interesting lineup of guests, although I will tell you, some of these folks are running into, shall we say, their legal counsel suggesting that because of exactly what Charles just said, we all know that justice is going to prevail, right? And that is occurring as we speak. The curtain is being pulled back. And I do believe that your spaces, you all should be mindful, could very well end up in a federal investigation, as well as you could end up in a congressional hearing. There's a lot of things being shared in these spaces, which is why we are mindful of that. And Charles, I do appreciate your candor. I appreciate your courage, I have nothing to lose other than to hide in the truth. And, you know, as one of my FBI buddies has told me, who's former, so he's one of the good guys now. But he said, you know, Monica, the best place to hide is always in the truth. And that reminds me of Psalm 91.
Absolutely.
Amen. And so I close out every one of my spaces, regardless of who my special guest is or their religious affiliation or any of you, with prayer. So before I do that, you're welcome to stay or go, receive a blessing or not. We love you and we're very grateful that you're here today. Please follow a few people. I see Lindsay, I see your hand up. Give me 1 second. Please follow Tin Foil Tricorn, my regular co-host, along with Christopher Moreno, who's currently in the speaker position, but Christopher the Warrior is my other usual co-host. And please follow Heather Mullins and support her work, as well as Charles. You're going to want to follow Charles. Charles is the man to follow.
along with Dr. Huff. Okay. And Charles is putting it all out there. David Beckerman as well. And Stephen Steele also has a show. Please follow him. Also, someone to follow who has just got a heart of gold, who is leading the charge of PAs, nurses, doctors, and really helping to build a community and bridge some gaps, is Michelle Peterson. You will see her also here in the listener position, but please follow Michelle. Also, Maze Love, as I said earlier, also want to highlight following Ross Dyer. I'm just going through some of you guys in here who do have followings, and you host your own great spaces, which I always appreciate. And I think it's important to bring serious people into serious conversation for dialogue that is going to be healing, right? And truth and knowledge is healing. One of my brothers in Canada who kept us very well informed, and I think he just is, where'd he go? There he is. Please follow this gentleman with a Canadian flag, but Bob Fact Checker. Those guys kept us all informed during our trucker issues in Canada and, you know, having to contend with their own government lunacy. J-Man also has a fantastic concept that I would like for you guys to check out. So follow Jamie on the producer. He's in here as well. A lot of great people come into my spaces. Please follow each other, support one another's networks. That's very important. Lindsay, before I get started, go ahead.
I just wanted to add something real quick about something I pinned up in the nest. Since Dr. Malone was not able to join today and his flight got delayed out of Europe, one thing that he has been sounding the alarm on is the damage that the spike protein, the synthetic mRNA and the spike protein does to the T cells. And he succinctly explains what happens and how this harms immune systems, like the two-year-old that you mentioned, Monica, that's in the hospital right now. So there's a video I pinned up there that I know was suppressed, I'm sure, at the time when I shared it last year, but it's very informative and it's got a lot of great information in it. And I just highly recommend that everyone take the time to watch it and listen, because he goes into detail explaining what happens to our T cells and why we're seeing the rise in certain autoimmune disorders because of it.
Thank you.
Just wanted to add that.
Perfect.
Yes.
So,
thank you.
So here's what we're going to do after I finish. Charles, I'm assuming you're coming back with us Wednesday. I hope. I mean, I hope we have you for the duration of our series. I'm going to leave the space open briefly while and allow you guys to get up there in the nest and pull from that material. I think studies show that only like 3% of space participants engage the nest. So I want to encourage you to do that, because it's information that will be helpful to you. And again, in this particular series, what we're doing is offering you the box cover to the jigsaw puzzle called COVID. And there are many different voices, many different spaces, many different conversations and experts and bloviators and the like that are going on about COVID. And all of that information for me personally has left me still scratching my head saying, what the hell really happened? I don't know about the rest of you. Right. And this has been a space, I believe, with this series that helps you congruently and soberly put the pieces, very important pieces of the puzzle together. And it will also bring you peace of mind, because you will be able to see that these actors, while they are attempting to hide what has occurred, it is impossible to hide from the truth and from the justice that's coming. And so I hope that that will actually feed your immune systems and bring you peace of mind and knowing that justice will actually prevail. And you can be sober-minded about that by putting these pieces together. So again, please follow everyone in the panel, the speaker's position, and get up into the nest and extract the things that you need. So Father, thank you so much, Father Yahweh, creator of heaven and earth, all things visible, invisible, every living spirit in this space and beyond. Thank you that this earth is yours and the fullness thereof. Thank you that by the blood of your Son and the broken body of your Son, that there is zero virus, man-made or nature-made, Father, that you are unaware of and that you are totally capable of healing and absolutely annihilating and eradicating from the face of the earth. So I pray over every person in this space, Father, in the name of your son, Yeshua, who is living in fear, dread, anger, wrath, bitterness, unforgiveness, just complete terror and dread of what's been unleashed in this earth, that I personally believe is completely 1,000% of the enemy's kingdom. I thank you that we are not subject to those forces. And so I speak life over your immune systems. I speak life and hope and health and joy over every cell of your body, from the crown of your head to the soles of your feet out to your fingertips. We speak to those bones, those dry bones. We speak to them and we call them forth to rise up, and we call homeostasis forward in your bodies that is true to the word of our living Father that says that he came to forgive us of all of our sins and to heal us of all of our diseases, whether man-made or genetically modified or created in a lab or through generational curses. That is our promise. That is what we stand on in my spaces. And that is what I release to you in the mighty name of Yeshua. So I pray for protection over Charles, over Dr. Huff, over Dr. Malone, over Dr. Long, over every person in uniform in this country, whether they've been jabbed or not. Father, I pray holy protection in a complete hedge of protection around this country and around your people, who are every living being is your, they're your people. So I thank you for rising up in your glory, Father, and separating the wheat from the chaff and the evildoers from those who are actually pursuing your righteousness, your peace, your joy through your son. And even those who don't know your son, Father, I thank you for your mercy and for your grace, and that that invitation is extended to everyone in this space today. So thank you for being an awesome, loving, forgiving, powerful, almighty and knowing Father of all things in earth and in heaven. We love you. In the name of Yeshua, we pray. Amen. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining me today. And we'll be back Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This space will be up shortly, and you can also download my show if you're subscribed to my podcast as well. Thank you very much, Charles. I appreciate you, sir. And God bless you. Right, you're welcome. You. Have a good day, everybody. Thank you.